Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special episode of Soccer 101. My name is Taylor Rockwell. With me today is Felipe Cardenas of The Athletic, and we, but mostly he, are going to be taking a look at the Copa America. Felipe, thank you very much for joining me today.
Anytime, Taylor. Happy to be back.
It's been a whirlwind like week for you, man. You had your Atlanta United piece drop that got a lot of attention, I would say justifiably so. And then I read your piece yesterday about the unrest in Colombia and what that's meant for the Copa America. It's busy times for you with a busy summer ahead.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a good thing. I think it's great to be busy. It's great to be covering kind of multiple topics and subject matters within the football universe. And yeah, like you said, this summer is going to be unprecedented, honestly. I mean, I know that word is thrown out so much, especially during COVID, but like this, there's never been so many soccer tournaments, I think, in one summer because of the cancellations in 2020. And so all of us at The Athletic, we are ready to cover it all. I mean, clearly our UK team is going all in on the Euro, on the, you know, European Championships. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Copa America. I know we're going to get into this, but I will be chipping in there as well. And of course, MLS coverage continues. Gold Cup will be going all out. Nations League as well. And all that is going to eventually lead to World Cup qualifying.
And Olympics in there, too, lest we forget. So many competitions. And a quick bit of explanation before we kind of get into it. To the extent possible, with 101 episodes, we try to keep them evergreen. We want to answer questions that people have now in the present day, but we'll maybe also have in the future so that these episodes stay relevant. This episode is going to be a slight deviation from that. We're still going to give basic information, but then we're going to take a deeper look at the situation relating to this summer's Copa America. But to start off, Felipe, from a very basic standpoint, for people who are unfamiliar, what is the Copa America?
Well, listen, the Copa America is the South American Continental Championship. It's the equivalent of the Gold Cup in North America, the equivalent of the Euros in Europe. And it's the most important national team, international tournament in South America. And, you know, it's changed over time, you know, originally, and I guess even this year, you were going to see just 10 South American countries taking on each other. And over the years, they've invited teams from CONCACAF, they've invited teams from Asia, even. And usually it's just to kind of change up the format from perhaps having more groups, having a different style of knockout competition. And of course, when you bring in new teams and invitees from different regions, you're getting more sponsorship money. So like there are many reasons why the Copa America over the years has had countries from other confederations. I think sometimes fans are like, why is Qatar in the Copa America? What is Mexico doing in the Copa America? What was up with the Copa America Centenario in the US? Like, those are all valid questions. And I think it just speaks to the evolution of that tournament. But traditionally, it is the premier continental tournament in South America.
I do love the Centenario and the way it's discussed. If you read about it, it's like to honor the 100th anniversary of the competition, it was held in the United States. Is that where it was originally? Like, okay, that's fine. I do want to look at what the format was going to be and what it will likely be as a result of some changes that have happened. But broadly speaking, if we have people who are maybe new to soccer, want to watch the Copa America this summer, don't want to miss the big games, what are the biggest rivalries that you would say people should keep an eye on?
I mean, obviously, Brazil against Argentina is always going to top the list of rivalries in South America. And any time that they meet each other in a Copa America, it just kind of elevates that rivalry. And of course, you have other ones as well, as like Argentina, Uruguay is kind of like this border rivalry that has a different and kind of a unique twist. You know, like they're very similar cultures. There have been instances in international soccer where they've looked out for each other in very crucial moments of qualifying. Perhaps Uruguay needed a tie. And so Argentina they won't attack. And then they'll let their brothers in. Like, that's happened. I think that was the 2010 World Cup where Colombia paid for it, where Argentina and Uruguay kind of made a deal to allow each other to get in at the expense of Colombia. Don't quote me. I think it's either 2010 or 2006. But of course, you have Chile and Peru. Chile and Peru is one of the most heated South American rivalries that exists to this day. Anytime Colombia, Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, kind of, again, those neighboring countries play, a little bit more is on the line. And then you have just like, I think I wouldn't call Colombia versus Argentina a traditional rivalry, but there is this unique history when they play as well. And so I think it's just, it's fun. It's a great tournament for those types of matchups. And, you know, usually the host country, really has a huge advantage. I mean, it's not every single time, but, you know, the 2019 edition was hosted by Brazil, and say what you will about that tournament and kind of how that went in the late stages. There were a lot of controversial refereeing decisions, but Brazil lifted that trophy, and they faced Peru, which is a surprise team that made it to the final. And so, yeah, the hosts always have a bit of an advantage. I think that's the case in every tournament around the world. But in Copa America, it just kind of takes on a different feel. Feels like it has this feeling of like take a World Cup qualifier and just like raise the level by about 100.
I have one more rivalry question for you. I think like there is that tendency to focus on Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay for obvious reasons. Are there rivalries that maybe go under the radar? Like, does Bolivia have an arch rival that we just don't know about because they haven't been particularly good in a particularly long time?
I mean, Bolivia they're not a strong team. They're the minnows of South America. But they can be the team that like some other countries don't want to face. I mean, that's mm-hmm. kind of like the role that they've embraced. You know, as far as rivalry goes, they have them. You know, I think if they any time they play, perhaps Peru or any country that shares similar, I think, topographical types of characteristics like altitude. It's kind of like who's the team that's hardest to beat in altitude, and that's probably always going to be Bolivia. But it's tough. It's tough for them to match up against Brazil or match up against Argentina, Uruguay, and Colombia, and talk about like this being a classic matchup between two old rivals. You know, it's just mm-hmm. not going to happen if Bolivia is in the picture. But they can spoil the party, certainly.
And so this summer's iteration of the tournament was going to be unique in that we've had, I think, like multiple host countries, quote unquote, before, but that was when it was more of a like over the course of the year they played the Copa America. I think that was back in the 80s. In terms of an actual tournament format, we have never had co-hosts. We were going to this summer. That is no longer the case. And before we get into the background and how we got here, my first question is one of sort of, I guess, like a technicality sort of question, but is it that Colombia dropped as the host nation or that Colombia was removed as the host nation?
Yeah, it is certainly a technicality. Quickly, you know, like I mentioned before, there was a 2019 edition of the Copa America. Brazil won that tournament mm-hmm. that summer. And then it's kind of like, why was there a 2020 version, which of course was canceled due to COVID. But the reason that the 2020 version was even, you know, on the table was because the, you know, CONMEBOL, the South American governing body, you know, they want to be in line with the UEFA European Championships. They want to be kind of on the same calendar, you know, have even years. And so that's the reason why there was going to be back-to-back Copa Americas. Mm-hmm. You know, the question about Colombia, it's such a good question, Taylor, because if you read the statement, CONMEBOL did not release a statement in English yesterday. The statement was in Spanish, and it was one of the most like weird and strange passive aggressive statements I've ever read in my life. It was like, they didn't just outright say that Colombia is no longer the host. It was like, oh, like, you know, thank you, Colombia and the government. And they mentioned the president and even I think the Confederation president and for all the work that they have done. In the future, you will have tournaments in Colombia that will raise the profile of the country and their sporting endeavors. But I think the last line was something like, you know, this tournament is going to go on. We will relocate the games that were meant for Colombia and announce those locations at a later date. And it's like, is, I guess everyone just interpreted that as, okay, Colombia's out. And like, it is, they are obviously out as co-hosts. But to your point, it was just never established that CONMEBOL was the one that made the decision. But they did, you know, like I think the way it played out, though, that you had the Colombian government yesterday really like desperately trying to make a last ditch, like Hail Mary effort to postpone the tournament under the argument that it had nothing to do with the civil unrest that's been going on in Colombia for the last 4 weeks. And I'm sure you'll ask me about that, but
I sure will.
The way that the government really positioned their request was about public health, that they, that, you know, they want fans in the stands. This was their minister of sport giving a press conference yesterday saying that the reason they wanted to postpone it until November was because, you know, this type of tournament should be played in front of fans, has nothing to do while he acknowledged the disturbances and the protests in Colombia. It was not the reason why they were asking for a postponement. It had everything to do with public health. They feel like by November protocols better, you know, everything from vaccinations and the COVID protocols will be in a better place. Perhaps they won't be playing behind closed doors, which they still are in South America. And so I think from the outside, you may say, okay, I guess that sounds reasonable. But in Colombia and around South America, it was clearly a way of the current administration in Colombia of almost like waving a white flag and saying like, hey, we don't want to be the administration that lost the Copa America. We're going to fight for this. There are elections in 2022. There's currently a candidate that's very far left. And he is really, based on what's happening in the country, has a lot of momentum. And that's concerning for a lot of people, definitely concerning for the current administration. So it was like this huge political drama that was playing out in front of everyone, but not everyone got it. And then Comebol had that weird statement. But yes, I mean, I think if you ask me, I truly believe that Comebol removed Colombia as a co-host of this tournament.
Why do you think Comebol originally had co-hosts in the first place, since that is such a change in the way they've operated in the past? How much does that relate to them doing back-to-back tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't have a clear answer, but like you said before, it had never been done. So I think it was just, there are a lot of reasons why. I think it's just to show, I think, the breadth and scale of the tournament. You know, I think even from the very top at FIFA, there's an ongoing, you know, plan and effort to really bring the sport to other countries, you know, to make this truly a global sport. I mean, clearly it is, but they want more Asian countries in the World Cup, or they want Asia to host the World Cup, or they want Africa to host the World Cup. You know, to your point about the Copa America Centenario, like why did the US get it? And I think it's about kind of like spreading this message of what South American football is. You know, hosting between Colombia and Argentina was always going to be a logistical challenge. And I think both countries, to their credit, you know, truly did do the work as far as updating the stadiums. Like I know this for a fact, the stadium that I went to when I would visit family in Colombia in Cali is an old stadium, and there was a lot of renovations that took place there. They were preparing to host, I think, a quarterfinal and several group games in Cali. So I think it was a way of Comebol showing like, look, we can do this. We can, if the European championships can be hosted in two different countries, like, look at us, we can do the same thing. And it was really going to be this massive, massive effort. I think anyone that went to the World Cup in 2014 in Brazil knows how travel can be during an international tournament. It's not easy. And clearly they were willing to do that. It just did not work out. You know, it was a perfect storm of the pandemic, protests and disturbances in Colombia. And in Argentina's case, COVID just has not been taken care of. It's not under control yet. They're surging as far as cases go. I think I read yesterday that they hit a record again, a one-time record as far as cases just yesterday. And as we speak, Taylor, you know, early this morning, news broke that league play in Argentina would be suspended due to COVID-19. And there is like a 9-day strict lockdown happening in Argentina right now. So, I mean, even as we are recording this, I still think the Copa America is in jeopardy, because we don't know if Argentina will ultimately be chosen as sole hosts? Will a country like Chile or a country like Paraguay, where who have stepped up and said, hey, we can help, will they be host? Someone tweeted me like, why not the US again? And I'm like, listen, at this point, anything is possible. So it's just like you mentioned, you said whirlwind yesterday, it has continued today, and it's going to be an interesting next, I think, 72 hours.
Hey folks, a quick break to let you know that this episode of Soccer 101 is brought to you by Manly Bands. When it comes to wedding rings, the emphasis tends to be on the engagement ring, what the bride will wear, less so on what the groom is going to wear. I know for me, I ordered one off the internet. It did not fit properly. My in-laws had to run out and get me a ring from Walmart to make do. If you do not want that type of stress in your life, then Manly Bands is here to rescue from an otherwise hellish band buying experience. To get started, you can order the Manly Ring Sizer from Manly Bands to ensure that your ring will fit perfectly. You can also use their app. I've said this before, I will say it again. If you want to use that app, I would say pull down the skin around your ring knuckle so you can see exactly what the widest point is going to be. Otherwise, you're probably going to get one that's too big. But if you look at that knuckle and think about just getting the ring just past it, that's all you need to do, then the ring is in there and it will fit comfortably. Mine fits perfectly. It's nice and shiny. It catches the light. It's very pretty. I enjoy it a lot. And I would encourage you, if you're in the market for a new ring or you are engaged and needing one of your own, Manly Bands has an insane selection of materials to choose from. Gold, wood, antler, steel, dinosaur bone. You can get a dinosaur bone ring that continues to impress. And even the meteorites that killed those dinosaurs. So a meteorite from outer space coming in, I think that's like the formula for some sort of superhero story. So if you want that, again, Manly Bands is here for you. So order your Manly Band and get 21% off, plus a free silicone ring. Go to manlybands.com/soccer. That's manlybands.com/soccer for 21% off. Manly Bands, the best damn rings, period. Thank you to Manly Bands for sponsoring today's episode. Now back to the show. You've already kind of addressed this a little bit, but I want to delve deeper into Colombia for a moment, because obviously you have familiarity and interest with like the situation on the ground in Colombia. I'm assuming it's fair to say that it is not just COVID that has led to this. It sounds like it's, as you said, a perfect storm. But how much of it is related to COVID, and then how much of the sort of unrest is related to government malfeasance, corruption, and the kind of usual issues that tend to lead people to rally and protest? Because it does feel a bit like there are a lot of different issues factoring into the situation on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, certainly COVID-19 and the pandemic, the lockdowns, first of all, they've been much more strict in South America than what we were, any of us were used to here in the United States. And so, you know, the U.S. is coming out of it, you could say, slowly, gradually. Vaccinations are taking off here. I think numbers clearly could be better in the U.S., but the fact that there are fans back in the stadium, the fact that look at Atlanta United that hosted 40,000 plus, you know, Colombia, people in Colombia and South America, they don't see the light yet. Okay. And so they've been in their homes, several lockdowns. And yes, I think you're right, Taylor. I mean, the COVID-19 is certainly one of the major factors of why Colombia is in their fourth week of protests. Many of the protests have been violent, up to 47 dead. And that number, I'm sure, is not even accurate. I'm sure there are a number, it's an even higher number. But you take the pandemic, the frustration, the agony that people had with the pandemic. And then Iván Duque, who's the current president of Colombia, and his administration proposed a tax reform bill that really set the country off, especially the middle class. It was a tax reform bill that was going to feature a significant tax hike on just basic needs, you know, like milk, eggs, steak, meat, gasoline, utilities. And it was not well received by the majority of the Colombian population, a population where that is struggling with everything from unemployment, inequality, and clearly the pandemic has just raised those frustrations and the fears of the future to unprecedented levels. And so that's what caused the protest, you know, many of them began very peacefully, but they've since evolved to several disturbances that are just taking place all over the country. Even Copa Libertadores matches that took place within the last few weeks had to be, you know, stopped due to, you know, tear gas seeping into the stadiums because of protests that were taking place while games were being played. It was just not, it was not looking good for Colombia while this was happening, knowing that a decision was imminent about whether they could host the Copa America. And clearly, you know, when I talk to my friends and my family, you know, soccer has always been like this. I wrote it in the piece, like a great unifier in Colombia. No matter how hard times are, people look to soccer. They look to the national team to kind of bring the country together. And this situation is almost like too big for even that to happen. You know, people are just concerned about their futures, about the political future of the country. And, you know, I had friends tell me, like, we can't do it. We're not equipped right now to handle an international tournament. So that's where it all started. And that's been ongoing up until literally 24 hours ago when the cup was just really wrestled away from Colombia.
I know it's been a very, very long time, but was it the 86 World Cup that was moved from Colombia as well?
Yes. You know, actually yesterday it was one of the big outlets in Colombia, El Tiempo, which is kind of like, I guess it's like the New York Times, right, of Colombia. They actually had a report saying that now Colombia had become the first country ever to lose both a World Cup in 1986, to your point. And that was due to, you know, narco terrorism, the violence from many of the cartels at the time. I think a referee was killed, right? You know, before the tournament took place, was set to take place in Colombia. That tournament was since moved to Mexico. And I think
wow, under the guise of there had been an earthquake, right? So that, like, even then you have sort of like differing differing reasons offered for why that was happening. But yeah, just like narco terrorism was the root of it.
Right. And so now Colombia loses hosting responsibilities for this Copa America, and they become the first country to lose, you know, these two types of international tournaments. It's a huge blow for Colombia. Yesterday was a sad day, for the country, because it was like confirmation that everything that they're going through right now, there certainly is no, I don't want to say there's no end in sight, but it wasn't a matter of, hey, just give us the tournament and we'll show you that we can do it. That's not the case. It's just too big of a risk to host several national teams, and expect there not to be any disturbances during games. Like, I think I've talked to several of my colleagues, even you via text. And it's like, what happens when Colombia plays during this, if they host the tournament? What happens if they win? What happens if they lose? What, like, how will people react? It was too big a risk to take.
In terms of where the nation goes from here, you mentioned the election in 2022. This is where I think, like, my knowledge of South American politics is very, very limited, and I will very happily lean on yours, because when you say there's a far left candidate who's gaining steam, but that is a concern to many people, my assumption is that that is not a concern the way it is in this country when you have a far left candidate coming to prominence. I'm going to assume that there are other issues that are of concern for the powers that be.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not ideal to try to compare politics in South America with politics in the United States, whether you're talking about right wing or left wing or center right or liberal. They all have different sort of connotations in both regions. You know, there are conservative parties in Colombia. There are far right parties. There are far left. There are center right. There are centrists. It's like you have the whole gamut. But it's a country that has had a lot of political turmoil, even civil war that has led to, that has always been intertwined with politics. You know, like FARC, which is a far left narco terrorism guerrilla group that has been in the country since the 50s and 60s. Really, they've had an ongoing, you know, war against the government, and the current left wing candidate for presidency, his name is Gustavo Petro, is a former guerrilla member, and now he's a presidential candidate. So depending on what side of the spectrum you're on, that can either be terrifying. It can either be, hey, the country needs to address certain aspects of the population in the country that a politician with that sort of perspective can address. There's certainly a far right party whose president Álvaro Uribe was in power for many years, and he has his followers, and he can point to things that went well. Several can point to things that went terribly wrong during his administration. But to your point, yes, there are elections in 2022, and what has been happening in the country has been a bigger blow to the current administration, which is more of a conservative party, than certainly any left leaning politician who has, you know, I guess the people on his side. Not everyone, trust me. I just go into my Colombian WhatsApp group chat, and it's pretty intense as far as the tug of war between friends and family members and what this country is going to look like in the near future. So without getting too political, and I'm trying to be as objective as possible, it is certainly a different ball game when you talk about politics in South America versus the United States. Trust me.
Is it more regional, as in like you mentioned family from Cali? Is Cali traditionally a leftist, a more conservative area? Does it break down like that, or is it pretty different wherever you might be?
I think it depends. And listen, like there is a definitely like a left of far, much more left leaning mayor of Cali right now, and he has had his fair share of detractors. It's just cyclical, Taylor. You know, it depends on who wins elections, like who's voting, who's not voting. You know, some of it is very basic as well. You know, like this comes down to elections, honestly. And right now, there seems to be sort of a movement in Colombia. But right at the same time, there's a conservative party that is in power. Iván Duque is in power, and if you want to get, you know, data driven, and you look at the numbers, there are certainly several positive arguments in Duque's favor as far as the economy up until, you know, COVID. And so it's just like a recipe for, like I said, the perfect storm of where even something like Copa America, you know, the most popular sport in the country, it's strange to me to hear family members and friends, not that they don't care about the tournament, but to be like, we can't do it. I don't think we have the backbone right now to support that sort of tournament. Others are like, no, we need the tournament. You know, I had a friend being very vocal saying, we can do this. We need to show everyone that we can host this country. And clearly that was what the administration was fighting for yesterday up until 5 p.m. Eastern. And so, like I said, the Copa America pretty much became a political tool, you know, and it has become that. And so that's like the background, you know, here in the United States, that's not really being talked about, but that's clearly, that was clearly at play yesterday as well.
Do you have concerns then that Colombia becomes the scapegoat for things, that let's say Copa America doesn't end up happening? And as you mentioned, it's not as though COVID is like under control everywhere else, just not in Colombia. I think we talked about this already a little bit, but I read that Argentina had the highest number of daily deaths it's had earlier in the week. So it's not like Colombia has things under control. If they ended up postponing Copa America or just canceling this iteration outright, do you have a concern that that becomes it was Colombia's fault sort of narrative, as opposed to it's a continent-wide problem or a worldwide problem?
I think myself and every Colombian has always had that concern, Taylor, that once again, you know, the eyes of the world are on Colombia for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And it's super unfortunate because it's a beautiful country with so much history, so much tradition, so much folklore, and they were ready for the tournament. I really, truly believe that. You know, I was looking forward to the possibility of traveling to Colombia to watch some games with friends and family, to check out the national team. I've never seen the national team in Colombia, and it was going to be, you know, a trip that I had on the calendar. But yeah, and that has actually been vocalized by people in Colombia. I know El Tiempo had a big report a few weeks ago that three of the top sponsors for Copa America were threatening to pull out if a decision wasn't made concerning the safety and guarantees of that tournament. And they had a source that said, you know, we don't want to be, you know, pariahs in South America. They don't want to be scapegoated. They don't want the world to look at Colombia in this negative light, you know, once again, after so many years of kind of coming out of that. So it's super unfortunate. You know, I think, you know, I mentioned the kind of weird statement from Colmebol, but, you know, I did hang on, you know, one of the sentences that said there will be other opportunities for Colombia to host an international tournament. And that has to be, you know, the hope. That has to be what Colombians and, you know, the Minister of Sport and the Federation in Colombia truly hope for. You know, they'll have an opportunity to come out of this and say, you know, let's do it again. Let's show the world that we can host this tournament and do it well.
It's kind of a random question, but it definitely connects to what you're already talking about. Like, do you avoid or not enjoy shows like Narcos, for example, and like accents aside, because they sort of reinforce those images of Colombia as, oh, it's a narco state, there's drugs everywhere? It does feel like it's the easy thing to joke about, to reference when you're talking about Colombia. And I would assume that shows like that don't necessarily help.
I mean, I love Narcos. I'm just going to be honest with you.
I'm right there with you. It's why I felt guilty and wanted to ask.
No, I mean, it was because it was well done. I really felt like it was well produced. It was well written. It was as close to the truth as possible. And the truth can hurt sometimes. Those realities of the 80s and 90s in Colombia, that, you know, rival cartels and how it even, like, of course it affected sports. Like, my team, America de Cali, was, you know, owned by the Cali cartel. And that's why, you know, at times I grew up and I would go to this like crazy 50,000 capacity stadium. The best players in Colombia, some of the best players in South America were playing for that team. And it was insane to watch. I was 10 years old. I didn't know what was going on, but I, you know, later I read about it. And to your point, yeah, of course, I don't want anyone to just think that Colombia is what's portrayed, you know, in a Netflix series about Pablo Escobar. But you can't deny that that's part of the country's history. And like, that's what I said before. I feel like the country was really moving forward. And it's such a rich country as far as sport goes, and the athletes that come out of Colombia in every sport, not just soccer, are always high level. And this, again, is just kind of like another blow. Like, I cannot reiterate more the fact that yesterday was a dark day for the country. It was a dark day, a sad day. And you know, I think personally, as someone being born in Colombia, I was raised in the U.S., I have kind of that biculturalism in me. It always hurts, especially when I report on it. It was kind of a strange feeling to be reporting as a journalist on the things that I've read about growing up, and kind of chasing a story yesterday as well. That's what I did, you know, talking to sources and other journalists in Colombia. It wasn't Super League style. I'm not going to say it was like what happened with the Super League, how it's like every minute, like there was a new tweet and a new bombshell, but it was certainly a day of like, we knew something was coming. And it was just a matter of time.
I want to ask this in a not like, what's your prediction sort of way, but you are obviously more informed than I am. What do you think, if you had to guess, happens this summer with the Copa America?
Man, I don't know. You know, I think I was writing a brief for The Athletic, which is kind of like our shorthand, our short form. And I kind of left it up in the air. I think the first time I wrote, you know, the story that you referenced about the unrest in Colombia, you know, it was unpredictable at the time. And even last night when they removed Colombia as a host, I still felt like it's very unpredictable as to what will happen. Now, I think now CONMEBOL, the government of Argentina, are going to do everything in their power to make sure that this tournament goes on. And I think what's going to be really difficult for everyone to stomach is that, let's say it does. Let's say Argentina, you know, says we can do this. It's just going to be extremely, you know, the COVID protocols are going to be very severe, very strict. There's not going to be any fans in the stadium. I mean, me personally, Taylor, like, I'm not looking forward to that sort of competition anymore. But I don't think at this point CONMEBOL it will be willing to postpone or to cancel this tournament again. And, you know, yesterday, to your point, actually 2 days ago when I spoke to Fernando Gordirarán, it's a tongue twister there, but he's a Uruguayan midfielder who plays for Santos Laguna. He was called up by the Uruguayan national team. And I asked him, I was like, listen, you're a player. You're going to go play in these countries that are going through these very difficult situations. Edison Cavani, the striker for Manchester United, said recently that he essentially just dismissed the tournament. Felt like it was not the right time to be playing Copa America. He even questioned World Cup qualifiers. And, you know, Fernando Gordirarán, the Santos midfielder, told me, like, while it's a delicate situation, he felt like you can't continue to postpone these games. You just can't. And that understanding the situation in both countries, I kind of feel like some players, especially him who's been getting a rare call up, it's like, let's just go. Let's just play. So I think that's going to be the attitude moving forward. They're just going to try to get this tournament going.
This is, I don't even know what I'm asking for here, but basically like the way this kind of came to my mind is we had a listener question about what's a city you would want to go. Like if you, because COVID is on the, like the decline with vaccinations and everything, what's a city you would want to go to this summer to watch like the most exciting games? And my answer was going to be a city in Colombia. I messaged you, Felipe, and asked like, which one would I want to go to? And your response was like, none of them. Like, it's not great
now.
And I think that was like, I felt very much like an ugly American there. I felt very much like everything's fine now. And that's sort of like the definitive frustration with, I think, the United States and the American people from the world over is sort of that we're just like, yeah, everything's fine. We're fine. So it's fine everywhere. And so with that, like in mind, I guess my question is like, are there things that people could do? Is it just an awareness thing? Are there fundraising efforts for making sure that there are more vaccinations? Are there ways to kind of volunteer time or help out in any way just so that it does stay more at the forefront? Because I would very much like to go to Colombia someday. It's a country that I've always been interested in. And I feel sort of, I don't know, just ignorant about not knowing what's going on there, not knowing really how to help.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, thank you for that. Like, I wish off the top of my head, I could just like rattle off a bunch of foundations that people could donate to. I'm sure your listeners, they're very savvy. They're very smart. They can go, you know, look that up. Like, but to your point, you know, we went through this summer. This country went through a lot of similar, I think, situations as far as, you know, protests about inequality, about unemployment, COVID, you know, police brutality, police violence. And some of these same, you know, some of the same reasons why Colombians are out of the street are shared by many Americans. You know, police violence and police brutality and unemployment and inequality, that's what people are protesting and marching for in Colombia right now.
Yeah, there were, what, 47 killed by police, I think, in a protest last week.
Right. And there's, of course, there are other sides to all this. There are very, you know, there are legitimate small business owners that just want to work, that just want their businesses to prosper, even in the face of a pandemic, in the face of protests. And when they're businesses are vandalized, you know, they're just sort of innocent victims. And that's super unfortunate. That has been happening throughout Colombia as well. So I would tell the listeners to just, you know, educate yourself, read, you know, find the stories that where you can read about what's truly happening on the ground. It's a great way to understand some of the politics in Colombia. Like, go to The Athletic, find my stories. I've written two about the unrest in Colombia and the possibilities of what will happen with the Copa America. I've linked to some very high level reporting out of the New York Times that gets into the details about what is going on. So I think that's a great way to start. Now, I remember when you texted me and you're like, hey, between these cities, Bogota, Medellin, and Cali, let's just play a game. Let's pretend like this is not happening. Because I did have an answer for you. And I think, like, if you want to visit Colombia, and I've had other readers reach out to me before and say, hey, I want to go to Colombia. Where do I go? What should I do? And I love that question because there's so much to do. You know, Colombia has mountains, beaches, rivers, you name it. You can pretty much experience everything in Colombia. But like, if you go to, for instance, in Bogota, the capital, It's a massive city. It's very much like a New York vibe, cosmopolitan, you know, the art museums, the center of government, high-end restaurants, a different climate. You know, you're at altitude. It's kind of gray sometimes. It's the sun comes out and then it dips away and it gets cold like throughout the day. It's just like a really cool sort of environment to visit. Medellin is kind of like very artsy and progressive. The climate is beautiful all year round. It's like the perfect spring weather, if you will. And you know, their mass transport system is one of the best in South America. And education is key. It's kind of like a very forward thinking city as far as education goes. Medellin, Cali, where I was born, you know, I think it has this vibe of like, it's kind of like a tropical sort of climate, and it's so folkloric. It's you know, soccer and sport just kind of come out of the pores of people in Cali. Salsa capital of the world. You can party. It's kind of like a party vibe, I think. And so, Of course, the food is excellent. The culture of the city, I think the culture of Colombia is really seen at a very close, granular level in Cali. So it's all these things, I think, are what made the country such an awesome host city for a country like this as far as tourism goes. And like I said before, they were ready to kind of show off. It's a shame that they won't be able to.
And if I wanted the best cumbia, is that going to be Cali as well?
I think so. Now, perhaps your listeners that are of Mexican descent will say, what? You know, we created cumbia. They can just go back to their homes and pretend they don't. Cumbia was created and born in Colombia. So yeah, but cumbia is also very coastal. So like if you go to the coast, like, you know, Santa Marta, which is like a beachy city, and Barranquilla, which is the home of the national team, very much coastal. And you can listen to cumbia and vallenatos, which is another sort of music that is very typical of that region.
Well, Felipe, I really appreciate you taking the time to help make sense of everything that's happening. And I'm sure we will continue to talk to you as things progress. You've already mentioned where people can find you, but let's have it one more time. If people want to read more from you, hear more from you, how can they do so?
Follow me on Twitter at Felipe Carr. I am on Instagram as well, Felipe_Cardenas_SCCR. And of course, you know, subscribe to The Athletic. You know, I know I'm one of many awesome writers that we have. But just to kind of go down the list of what I'm covering, clearly MLS is big. Atlanta United, I'm in Atlanta, so I do that. But, you know, hey, I'm hitting Liga MX. We're hitting international soccer. All of these tournaments over the summer are going to be covered. Gold Cup, Nations League, Euros, even Copa America when that kicks off. And so I think we're just all trying to really offer more to our subscribers and readers. So check it out. The Athletic, go.
And are you more besties with Joseph Martinez or Tata Martino at this point?
that's tough. It's a tough one to say. I mean, it's we hadn't seen Joseph in so long. And so when he kind of came out of his injury and we saw him for the first time, first of all, it was over Zoom. But him and I had a nice little moment, you know, when I saw him and I was able to say hello. I felt like he has several nicknames for everybody. I think even I may have a nickname like Felipillo or something like that. Like he comes up with names all the time, but, it was great to see him. You know, Tata Martinez, you know, listen, he's a guy that's very difficult to get to. You know, I think I've had one one-on-one with him in over 5 years and I had to fly to Dallas to get it. So, but I'm also on several Zoom calls with him. And when my name pops up, I think he remembers, yes, that guy that asked the nerdy tactical questions from Atlanta. That's him.
I get that same response a lot of the time. It's just from Virginia, I think, instead of from Atlanta. But yeah, nerdy tactical questions, I think, are the way to go. And then talking to Felipe is also always the way to go. Felipe, thank you very much once again for taking the time.
Thank you, Taylor, for having me on and letting me talk about this. And hopefully the listeners walk away with a little bit more knowledge.
Of course, my friend, thank you for being here. Listeners, thank you all for listening. He's been Felipe. I've been Taylor. This has been Soccer 101, and we will talk to you all next week.